The InStyleOwen podcast is brought to you by Cybionics, an emerging CGM brand that focuses on simplifying how individuals aged 18 and above monitor and control their blood sugar levels. Upon becoming available on the market, the Cybionics GS1 CGM has helped users worldwide navigate the complexities of diabetes management with more confidence and peace of mind. Thanks to Cybionics, now more people are able to view and share their real-time glucose data, receive customizable glucose alarms, and generate full AGP reports, all directly from an intuitive Cybionics app, empowering them with the necessary information to make better decisions about their health. Cybionics combines data accuracy and comfort of wear, which is important to us all, with a feature-rich app. The 14-day scanning-free and calibration-free Cybionics GS1 CGM aims to deliver reliable, seamless diabetes management experiences. For more, check out cybionicscgm.com. This is the InStyleOwen podcast, where I, Owen Costello, try to redefine diabetes. In this week's episode...
The first thing they say to me is like, all right, in about a week's time, you're going to lose your leg. And that's the first thing. Oh, they're like, you've sort of survived the first one. Your parents can't be in here with you because it's obviously COVID.
But before we get into that, everything you hear on the InStyleOwen podcast is from my own personal experience. And if you have any worries or issues regarding your diabetes, please contact a medical professional. Now, let's get stuck into this episode. Good afternoon and welcome back to the podcast. And whoa, do I have an episode for you today. I'm rarely speechless when I do guests' episodes. I'm rarely speechless in general, but this episode today and this conversation that I had quite literally left me speechless. So the guest that I have is Ryan Taylor. He has been living with type 1 diabetes for over 15 years. He is a personal trainer, a nightclub promoter, and is also an actor and reality TV star who has been featured on Geordie Shore, which is the UK version of Jersey Shore, which I'm sure most of us know about. What initially started as an infection in Ryan's leg led then to sepsis, which led to then almost completely life-altering complications. And I don't want to tell you too much now because I want you to hear it from Ryan himself. It is an insane story. And as I said, I was quite literally lost for words while recording this episode. So let's get stuck in. Enjoy.
So Geordie Shore was a random experience. Obviously, I'm not sure you can tell from my accent. I'm obviously not from Newcastle. they've sort of obviously strayed away from the typical that premise of the show. You had to be a Geordie. I think the last few years they had Louis on as well, who was from Barnsley. And they started moving away from it. And I think last year they were coming out of COVID. And the big thing was going to be we're going to like send in new people, none of them from Geordie Shore. And the original premise I got was it was going to be like the ultimate party season of Geordie Shore. It was going to be, we're going to send people who work party jobs, usually like from abroad, because the UK's party scene is obviously not as good as other places. So they're going to send in people who'd work party jobs and spice up the house, basically. That's what I got told. Then they sort of come to you when you're in isolation and turn around and say like, well, it's the ultimate party season, but we can't really party because even though COVID's ending, like you still can't go to clubs. It's still a big thing. Like, we still have to take massive COVID precautions. And because of that, they changed into sort of a dating season. So they had all these people still who were like from that party. Like we had, a stripper, someone who worked in dancing, all the main clubs, like an actual dancer, though, not a stripper. So they had like a variety of people who had done these other sort of jobs abroad. I was obviously a nightclub promoter. And then it was sort of on the drop of a hat, like, oh, by the way, it is a dating show. And I was dating someone at the time, so I said, this isn't good for me. I was literally there, like,
I wouldn't say that went down well.
we were on the rocks, to be honest. And we were on the rocks before I even said yes to the show. And then I knew going on it when it was just a party show in general, it's going to be hard because she's not stupid. She's watched Jersey Shore. She knows what it's about, really. And then when they say, oh, by the way, like you're dating, blah, 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 on the show, I was thinking, well, actually, I'm dating someone from a backup by Coventry. So it did cause like a bit of a situation, but they literally told us as we were like sort of going into the house. So it's a bit wild. And then, yeah, so we did that season. It was done based on like how well the person you were sort of with, how well of a couple you were, the couple sort of voted you in that. It was very obviously, I think most now shows sort of like a spin-off of Love Island almost. And it was like Geordie Shore's version of Love Island. And then after that, it was one of them, you obviously sort of tied with MTV for that year. And you just had to decide, basically. I think a few of them have decided to go back. I've decided not really to bother. There are so many things I want to do outside of just Geordie Shore. I've had some crazy experiences this year in TV, which to me, I wouldn't have obviously got if I had stayed on. And yeah, I'm not good. I'm not that sort of person who has to run something by everyone. I think I'd been on another podcast and talked and been, I'm very open about my experience on it. Like some things were amazing, some things probably weren't. And then I got a bollocking. I got a bollocking for not being PR friendly to them and not just saying good things. And so I don't wear that. I'm very honest. I'm going to be honest about my experience on it. And I just don't think it was a great experience. I'm so glad I did it. But long term, it wouldn't be something I would be interested in, to be honest. There's so many different things in television that I want to do that it wouldn't just be Geordie Shore. So I will not be on the next season.
There's people going to be disappointed about that, Ryan. They won't see you on the next one.
Do you know what? I was so sick when I was on the last season. It's the only time ever that I've looked at it, anything I've done, and just been like, wow. Because like, there's times where I probably perform better in certain things, not just television, but anything I've done. There's probably times obviously you do things well, things that you don't do well. That was the only time that when I was actually there, I remember being like, God, I should not be in here. Like, I was so sick. Like one of the six, not well, came straight out of hospital into the show. And watching it back, I was like, I felt like I was watching myself and I was like, Jesus, like, I look like I don't want to be there. Like I look like I haven't got the energy to even put in like conversation and stuff like that. It was weird for me watching it back. I didn't want to watch it back because I just, when I saw bits of me, I was like, that ain't me. I don't think that'd be a massive disappointment. Like I said, I felt like I didn't really do myself justice when I was on there, but also I was in a very weird situation health wise going into the show.
Well, that's obviously something that I wanted to ask you about. And
yeah,
obviously for anybody who doesn't know what Geordie Shore is, it's basically the English equivalent of Jersey Shore.
Would it So Jersey Shore was the original. Geordie Shore started just a couple of years after, because Jersey Shore was massive in America and like pretty much straight away. So
you obviously went on to Geordie Shore and this is put out to millions of people. So millions of people see you on the TV and see how you're acting and socializing and dating, as you've just said. But prior to you going on this Geordie Shore MTV show, what happened to you, Ryan?
So it happened over the space of a few weeks. It's so weird looking back on it now. Basically, I remember there was a day at work, distinctively remember this day, and I'd spoke to the casting people for Geordie Shore, and you know what? I just love doing casting calls. So I got a message about it. It wasn't even told to me that it was Geordie Shore, but I do these casting calls. I basically see them as interviews. Like if you can sell yourself to like a TV production company, you can sell yourself to a job. I just think it's a valuable skill to have, and I just find them interesting. I just love talking about myself. So I did it. I'd done a few of them, and then but it's not like it's like you'll do one, you'll sort of hear maybe a week later, or you want to the next stage, speak to them again. So it wasn't really in my mind. And then I literally had done one where they had said, oh, by the way, the show is Geordie Shore, by the way, and this is where they sort of told me it was going to be the party season. And now I'm obviously a bit interested. And then I'm at work one day, I just remember my leg, like, over the space of a day, start of the shift, I was walking around fine. And by the end, I could not move my leg to the left or right without like just like making like a noise. Everyone was like, what is he doing? I was making like a noise in pain, like it was like physically hurting. I'm gonna be like, what is wrong with my leg? Like, must have like, I was like, I'd never pulled a muscle or anything like that. So I really didn't know what this could be. And then over the space of a week and getting prescribed a crazy amount of painkillers and things just to try and numb me by the doctors, because this is peak COVID, so they're not seeing people in doctors in person. They're sort of speaking to you over the phone and diagnosing you essentially over the internet. So I was getting told I had sciatica. I was getting told I've got like a trapped nerve, and like this painkiller list is just building up by the second. I'm on like 8 different ones 5 times a day. I'm signed off work, and I'm still in pain. And it got to the point where like I'm noticing there's like an alien head popping out the left side of my leg. And that was the day where I was like, you know what, like we're just going to show up at the doctors because this is getting like ridiculous. So my dad drove me as I had to lie flat in the back because I could not bend my leg to sit down. And then we make it to the doctors. We go in there and I'm like, tell me this isn't an infection. Like, look at this. And the doctor's like, oh, 100%. We'll get you an MRI as soon as we can. And here's another painkiller. And I was like, this is the 9th one. Like, clearly they're not going to kick. Clearly this pain is staying around no matter what. Like, I'm on, this is the 9th painkiller. Like, not a chance. So we drove straight to the hospital. And during COVID, I think it was the sort of like a rule that like Sundays, they would only do a limited amount of surgeries and they wouldn't do it on a Sunday because of, they don't have many doctors in. They wouldn't do it on a Sunday unless it was a life or death scenario. And I think we arrived at about 2 a.m. Sunday morning, and then I was operated on a few hours later on Sunday. They cut open my leg and they saw that not only did I have sepsis, like a brutal blood infection, but I had a blood clot as well. And it basically had the first surgery where they were just sort of working out where everything was, trying to get the majority of this clot out. And then apparently it took them 5 hours to revive me after. So they had to get like my heart rate and my blood pressure to sort of match up to wake me up. And apparently one was sky high and one was like bottoming out. So with that, it took them 5 hours to revive me after the surgery. And I remember I woke up and I was like, didn't obviously like dazed, didn't really know what was going on, in a lot of pain. First thing they say to me is like, all right, in about a week's time, you're going to lose your leg. And that's the first thing. You've sort of survived the first one. Your parents can't be in here with you because it's obviously COVID. So I don't even know. I haven't even found out yet that my mum was on the phone for 5 hours speaking to them, waiting for me to wake up and just waiting for an answer. Is he awake yet? When I woke up and they told me that straight away, you're like, by the way, you are going to lose your leg. And that was obviously a bit of a dark time. I think I always try and see it now as like there's worse things in life. I was probably a bit selfish during this time. Like, I was very like feeling sorry for myself, I guess. But obviously it's just not a nice thing to wake up to, especially when I just think it was such a preventable thing. Like, if I'd been on antibiotics from day one, obviously wouldn't even got to the point of needing the surgery. So anyway, skip ahead, get to surgery 2, go in expecting to like the day before, expecting to lose my leg, come out after surgery, my leg's normal, and I had no idea why. And apparently a female doctor had spoken to the 2 male doctors who had made the decision to amputate my leg and said, basically, we're in this position where we're going to operate on him anyway. How do you know we have to amputate his leg? And they said the infection will be in his bones. If the infection is in his bones, he'll never be able to walk on it without pain. He will be a cripple. He'll need to, honestly, it's better to get his leg off. And she said, we've got him here for the whole day. It's getting into Sunday surgery. Let's drill into the bones and see. And when they did, so miraculously, all the infection was in like the muscle and fat tissue. There was no infection in my bones. And then it just was a case of like literally hoovering out every bit of like muscle and fat in my leg. And so I woke up after the second surgery just like shocked, like, I've got both legs. It's crazy. And then we had to have a third surgery about a week later, where they finally got out the remainder of the infection. It was literally like just full of infection. And I remember feeling my leg after all the inflammation's gone down, and it's like a bag of milk. Like, there's not one drop of like muscle left in the left leg. There's nothing. And I literally couldn't like move it without just feeling like just like constant muscle strain. There's so little muscle in that leg holding it all together. It would feel like I pulled 4 or 5 muscles every time I moved it to the left or right to get off like the hospital bed. So painful. And it literally sucked out about a stone and a half out of that leg. So during all this, by the way, I decide to take a final message from Geordie Shore while going through this. I think I was just so off my head on morphine and other things in that hospital. I just wanted some like positive in my life, I guess. So I take this final call from mum, and they're like, by the way, we've loved you this whole time. We're going to get you down to London this week, and you're going to meet the MTV execs, and you're going to go on Geordie Shore, like it's confirmed. And obviously, I don't have a leg. At this point, I thought I was getting my leg amputated, and then now I don't have enough muscle in that leg to walk on it. So I'm there, like, I don't think I can make it down, but I want to be on your show. Like, I decided I wanted to do it because I feel like after that sort of like bad experience, I just wanted something fun to look forward to. And they literally were like, arguing with me. I was like, look, I literally cannot leave this hospital bed. Explain the situation. And they were like, what, are you sure you still can come on the show? And at the time, obviously, I'm stupidly just saying yes. So they say, fine, you can speak to the MTV execs. We'll do a FaceTime call with you. He was like, I know you'll smash it. Like, it won't be too long. They just want to make sure you're right for the part. And they want to see, sort of see like what position in the house you're going to play. So we're there putting like a bed. I'm there, like, my parents are just happy that I'm alive. I'm there telling them to put like a backboard behind me in the hospital bed. I'm telling them to get me like to check me out of hospital so I can get a tan for 2 hours and check me back in. And then I'm in this hospital bed trying to act okay to the MTV execs. I just absolutely just sound them a dream. And then they're like, they were literally like, yeah, we want you. Are you sure you're going to be able to do this? And obviously me, I'm like, yeah, of course. And I sort of heard like rumblings that like it was the end of June was going to be the start of the filming date. And this right now was middle of May. So I'm there, I say to him, was like, 6 weeks, I'll be walking again. We're laughing, like I'll smash it. And they turn around to us and like, 6 weeks is the end date. You're going into isolation in 10 days and the show starts mid-June. So you've got basically 2 weeks. And I was just sitting there like, trying to think of something on the spot, and I just said like, oh yeah, 6 weeks for the average lad, 3 weeks for me. And then the execs were like, I think they were looking at each other like, this lad hasn't got a clue. but I think they want different people, and I think I was just I think they just obviously liked something about me, so they said yes. And then we literally it was like I was buzzing, like they sent over all the contracts and stuff like that, but then I'm sitting there like looking at the state I'm in, looking at like the amount of medication I'm taking, like I already feel like I'm a walking pharmacy anyway before having sepsis and all this blood infection, and now we've got all these extra things I've got to take. I'm like, and I know they're sending me over forms like declaring all your medical stuff, and I'm there like, Jesus, can I actually put all this down, like all this stuff? And so then it was literally like I had 10 days to get off crutches. So I literally, the second I got out of hospital, I was trying to walk, and my mum and dad were going mental at me, like, you need to rest. And I was trying to like walk to try and build some strength back in this leg. And yeah, just it's a crazy time. I look back at it now, I wouldn't even think twice about it. Like, it could have been even a much bigger opportunity, and I never would have done it. But at the time, it's like, when I have my head set, like, oh, I'm doing this. I've got stories about to do with my diabetes where it's like, I probably should have not done something because of my diabetes, but I had it in my head I was doing that. And as soon as I have something in my head, it's getting done no matter what. And as soon as I decided, oh, by the way, I'm going on Geordie Shore, like, this leg infection didn't matter. The fact that I could not walk did not matter. So, yeah.
Brian, I don't even know.
It's a bit of a wild start, isn't it?
I actually don't even know where to start with all of that, because I had no idea about the extent of the pain, the painkillers, the operation, the whole process, the fact that you were close to losing your leg. Like, I'm kind of mind blown here. But
yeah,
it's the first thing, and I have a few questions based.
Yeah, go.
I'm sure anybody listening has loads of questions too. But the first one, well, the thing that jumps out to me initially was the fact that you were almost going to get your leg amputated until one doctor said, hold on, maybe we should double check something here.
Crazy. It's one of my biggest regrets is that I'm obviously in this, I'm not gonna lie, I was heavily like medicated. Every time they'd walk around with morphine painkillers, I was loading up on them when I was in hospital. So I wasn't really with it like for them these 3 weeks that I'm in there. Cause I was literally, I don't do good being told to lie in a bed all day. I need to be doing stuff. And number two, a lot of it was like a negative time in my life. Obviously, I'm here and losing my leg. This one of my biggest regrets is I never got that doctor's name. I got told it was basically a doctor who was there that day. I never got to see her. Like, I have no idea who it is, but all I know is it's crazy that you know, someone else, they throw that input. And if they hadn't have said that, I just would have one leg right now. And it's crazy that it's not even like, it wasn't even the mind of either two doctors, who I'm pretty sure were the more experienced ones, because they were doing the surgery and this doctor was not. And it wasn't in their minds, but it was in hers.
That is unbelievable. And the way I'm looking, and I'm sure you've thought about this a million times before, and the way I look at that is like that one decision by that doctor to make sure something is double checked could have just completely altered your whole life.
Yeah, I feel like no matter what, you always come out on the other end. Like some people having diabetes is, oh God, life-changing. Of course it is life-changing, but I've never not done anything I wanted to do because of it, basically. And the same, if I had one leg, it would 100% have changed my life. And it is, I would have still found a way to still be happy. That's always number one on the checklist. Would find a way to still be happy, find a way to still do stuff that I want to do. But that would be diabetes times 1,000 in terms of how much it'd change your life. Like, because at that point, I really had it in that summer. I even went back to IB for last year during the summer, and it was like, at that point, my sort of job was walking around club promoting in IB fans. Like, how many of them do you see with like one leg on the beach, like, especially in the place like IB, for where it's all about how you look and it's all la la la. It's crazy like that, and that's what literally I went and did straight after Geordie Shore, and it's like it would have literally impacted my life straight away, and then obviously forever. And I don't know. I'm really disappointed. I'd never got that doctor's name, but like, I could not be more grateful that there's obviously people out in the medical field who sort of think not only about, oh, what do we do by the book, but what do we do for this person? Because like I said, for like a 25, I think it was 24 at the time, 24-year-old lad losing your leg is like, obviously going to be, no matter what age, but obviously a 24-year-old lad is going to be a massive impact on their life, and obviously she considered that, whereas from what I gather the other ones didn't, and it was more like, by the book, his bones are going to be infected, so let's amputate it ASAP before they start getting infected. But again, if my bones were already infected, I think they should have looked into it, because I'm not being funny, the amount of pain I was in I don't think one or two more days, like, while they had a little look around and worked out whether the bones were infected, would have made that much more difference, because like for about a week to 10 days it was constant pain. So
And how would you describe that pain, Ryan? Because obviously I can't relate that to anything I've experienced in my life. And from the sounds of it, you were getting pumped up on morphine and on nine different types of painkillers. What was it actually like? How would you describe it?
You have these things, parts of your life, which I'm so glad that I documented all with photos and videos, because in my messed up states on these nine painkillers, I seriously wasn't good. After, when I was in hospital, I went back and I was listening to voice notes, because I'd spent like a week with a girl I was seeing at the time, and I had no idea what we'd done. She had said we'd watched a certain movie a few days ago, had no idea. And I'll go out on my phone, and I saw there was videos of her dressing me one day, because I can't physically bend my leg. And I had no idea she was even around my house that day. I was so loaded on painkillers, but it was just a dull ache, and then all of a sudden sharp pain. And I just remember being like that. I basically just lay on the couch or lay on my bed and would just be sitting there, and it just got progressively worse to the point where I think the day that we went to hospital was when obviously we saw it was like sort of like an alien headstand form coming out of the leg. But the one or two days before that, I think for 24 hours, I was just like uncontrollably crying, not like screaming, but just like shaking, and just like being like it just doesn't stop. And it's weird, because you look back at it and you think, why the hell did I let it get that far? But obviously you're getting told by a medical professional, oh, it's sciatica. I'm there googling, like, does sciatica make you cry? Because I was in so much pain. I was there like, I swear loads of other people have sciatica. Like, surely this isn't it. And like, that's what I mean. Like, you're getting, that I think was real, that's where the injustice was done during COVID. Like, I bet there was a million other medical circumstances, probably more than a million, where people didn't get the treatment they probably should have got because you couldn't see a doctor. And like I said, I was just getting loaded up on painkillers, but all I know is it was constant pain, because I think I sort of drew the line when he started adding even more to it. And I was going back and listening to my voice notes, and I'm speaking like I've had 20 beers. Like, I sound, I'm slurring words, I sound off my head. And this was in the middle of the day. And it was a weird week. Like I said, it was just a constant pain, and then it would just get like extremely sharp if I tried to move my leg. So for about a week I was just literally propped up on a couch, So
do you feel as if it wasn't for the alien head, as you put it yourself, sticking outside of the left side of your leg, if it wasn't for that, would you have gone to the hospital at that time?
That's where it becomes quite weird, because the alien head was obviously letting us know the infection was there. But like I said, for the whole week before that, I didn't assume it was an infection. Like, we had, this is what's remarkable to me. Obviously, blood tests in the hospital had come back crazy, but you couldn't even get blood tests at that point as well, because it was during a time where you had to wait like a week for the blood test. So if they hadn't seen that, my white blood cell count would have been sky high and they would have known it's an infection. So I reckon, basically, when I had that surgery, they said it was that you operated on a Sunday because you probably would have died in the next 1 to 2 days. Like, it was that severe that, like, you would have died. So I reckon if that alien head didn't pop out and it was fully just stayed in my leg, like, yeah, that would have been it.
That's insane. So you were obviously then, Ryan, just like completely out of it for this whole time with all those painkillers.
Yeah, so like I would wake up in my heart. Even before I went, I mainly knew I was with the girl I seen. She had been around a lot. Didn't really tell any of my friends, but I don't do good with the... I think people saw when I was on the podcast and I was talking about my leg, they saw a photo of how bad it was. And loads of people mentioned me, oh my God, I had no idea. And I thought, why would you have any idea, to be honest? Because like, I'm not going to go and put that on social media. Like, it's not exactly like, I think... I'm not one for sympathy or anything like that. But I know the week before I was with the girl I was seeing, and so I wasn't really doing like nothing too weird happened, but I had no recollection of it. But when I was in hospital and I'm just literally like having probably one of the lowest points of my life, I'm just constantly on morphine all day, constantly just trying to get painkillers from them because it's just killing, not sure what's going on with the leg. I was just like, I had nothing to do but go on my phone. And it's like every time I'd wake up from a sleep, I'd look at my phone and I'd be like, Jesus Christ. I was sending out weird messages to people, like voice noting my mates and just sounding like, just talking about the most like random stuff. Cause it was like I was constantly drunk. Like I just wasn't with it when I was in the hospital bed. And I used to have to be like, you know what? I'm going to take this dose of morphine. So I'd eat my food, take this dose of morphine, and I'd literally be out to the nurse. So I'd take my phone, get it away from me because I don't trust myself on it. So yeah, it's just, there's just so little, recollection of that time period because of all them the medication I was on.
And I'm curious to know now, Ryan, because you were under your like mental and physical stress, you were pumping painkillers from the sounds of it, and you weren't fully conscious from the sounds of it too. How did your diabetes management fit into this whole thing?
There was no management. There was no managing there. It was impossible. It was straight up. All of these medications, so, you know, obviously you can get sugar-free antibiotic, sugar-free this. The ones that I specifically needed weren't sugar-free, for one. Morphine does an absolute number on your blood sugar. It's sky high. It was almost like impossible. It got to the point where there was days where I would wake up with like a dry mouth because I was constantly, my body was that worn out that I'd basically have about 4 hours and I'd need a good sleep. So I'd wake up, I'd text my mom and everyone, let them know I was okay. I'd get food dropped off, I'd eat that. I'd watch like something on my phone for an hour. And then I would take some morphine and do an 8 hour sleep. And there was times that I'd wake up for that little 4 hour sort of slot and I'd have the driest mouth in the world. Luckily, I guess you can say, but I was on a catheter at the time as well. So it's not like I had to run to the toilet or anything. I just could wee straight into the catheter. I'd have all the craziest, like the worst symptoms of high blood sugar. And I would just grab my insulin pen and literally, without even like trying to work out anything, I'd just inject 50 units because I knew 50, it was that bad.
50.
Because I knew it was that bad because like the stress, I'm sure we'll get into it a bit later on, but cortisol plays a crazy number on your diabetes. I'm only learning this now. It is one of the most important things to do with actually your diabetes management and the general day-to-day management of your blood sugar. And obviously when you're going through all these things, when you're going through all this shock, basically sepsis shock, your cortisol is spiked. It's so high. Mm. It's almost impossible to bring your blood sugar down. I was doing 50 just as like, okay, I feel high. I'll need 50. And I'm not like insulin sensitive or anything. I think I'm like quite normal in terms of like what I'll do for a gram of carbohydrate. So 50 to me would be like eating the world. And
to put that into perspective, even from my own experience, the largest single dose I've ever taken in my 10 plus years is 12 units. And you've taken 50.
Yeah, 50 to me, to do that, I'm trying to think what sort of, it would have to be like a crazy takeaway plus four or five desserts, like in the buffet bottle we're having full sugar Cokes. Like, it would have to be taking the absolute mick. I can't even think why. And but I said that would be 50 just to be like, okay, that would get me in range. Like, I knew that's how high I would be. It was honestly so, the symptoms you're getting, obviously I know everyone gets like hyper symptoms, but when you're that high, it's like you really do feel like you might get dry mouth usually if you're a little bit high. Like, you do feel that dry mouth when you're sky high and you need 50 units. I tell you, I'd wake up and it's almost like, felt like I'd smoked 50 fags. Like, it was like, what's going on in my mouth? That was honestly one of the most unpleasant things about that whole experience as well, was just the fact that like, I generally was sitting there, I just couldn't get diabetes under control. And also, at this point, I don't really want to interact. I'm already talking to enough doctors, and then they start sending down the diabetes doctors to, oh, can we help you out? And I'm there like, look, if there was a way to help us out, I would honestly speak to you. But it just sounds like it's a guessing game for the next couple of weeks when I'm on this, and it's just got to be a whole lot of insulin. I don't remember ever going low when I was in hospital. I don't think that was an occurrence. But it was, I think, even in the 2 weeks after my surgery that I was in there, the surgeries, I don't think I got down to a good, I maybe had the odd good number, but I never got a day of being consistent, no chance.
Yeah, see, and the thing about it is like, you're going through this physically, mentally, you're taking all these painkillers. It's enough stress as it is, enough pain as it is. And then on top of that, you have to deal with just excessively high blood sugar levels and pumping 50 units of insulin into you. That is madness.
It's like, obviously, diabetes is one of the things I always say to people, it's not a full-time job, it's a full-life job, isn't it? Because you take your eyes off the ball for 1 minute at night and you don't really work out how much you should inject. You inject too much, that could be, honestly, it could be have bad repercussions. But at this point, diabetes was the last thing. Honestly, it was the last thing I wanted, because I almost couldn't even think of where to get it down. Like I said, I was there each day adding like 2 units to my long acting. We use Traceba in the UK at the minute. So I was adding 2 units to my Traceba every sort of day. I think my usual Traceba dose for a day would be about 12 units. And I think at this point it was about 30. So I was adding 2 units a day, still not getting anywhere, still doing these 50 unit pumps.
So nearly like a 200% increase.
Crazy, honestly, yeah. And then it's like, but then it's the scariest part after that is when all of a sudden these things start coming out of your system. Because the thing is, antibiotics they don't stop the day you stop taking them. It's not like I take that last dose and, oh, I'll go back to my 12 units of Traceba tomorrow. Mm. No, there's a trickle down effect. So they slowly leave your system. So that was the scariest thing, because now it's like, well, I have a risk having far, far too much insulin in my body and maybe having some really scary scenarios, or I sit here miserably high all day by undershooting. And that was the hardest thing to balance. When we're coming off one medication at a time, okay, you don't get morphine anymore, but you still got all these other things in your system. You still got the stresses of the high cortisol, which is going to mess up with your diabetes. It was trying to work out, like, as we deduct each medication, how much are we deducting from this crazy insulin dose that we're doing at the minute? Mm-hmm. So that honestly was the science experiment in itself.
This is crazy stuff. This is unbelievable. You described, Ryan, your leg as a bag of milk after they took all the muscle out and the fat tissue out. What did your leg look like? Because obviously a podcast, we can't show a photo, but yeah, how would you describe your leg at that time?
I'll send some personally to you over because I think, I'll let you see. So it's one of the nastiest things you'd probably, you wouldn't believe it. Like, look, after the first surgery, I've got this photo, which is, it's the image that I show people because you get that reaction, like, oh my God, that looks like someone's bit off half your leg. And then I remember coming home. I'm not a vain person, to be honest. Like, people always think I am. I'm not a vain person. I'm not all about my looks. But I remember coming home and looking at my left leg and, like, generally, like, feeling like I wanted to cry. Like, I was sitting there, like, what is, like, I just had 30-something stitches in the left side of my upper leg going into my bum. And then it's half the size of my other leg. And then it's not even just half the size. It's half the size. And if you touch it, it just, you don't feel anything. You just feel, it's like, you just, your hand just pushes the skin out of the way because there was honestly zero muscle tissue in it. And then obviously every time you move it, you feel like you're pulling a muscle or a tendon or something like that, because there's, the muscles are, you're literally, they're developing by the second. Every time I eat, you'd feel my leg filling out for the next 10 days when I'm eating meals and stuff like that. I literally feel it filling out because you're literally developing tissue inside of it. But at the start, it literally was just, it felt like a bag of milk. That's honestly the best description I've ever thought for it.
So what did your recovery look like in terms of when you say that your leg was filling out and you could almost feel it and see it filling out over that 10 days? Were you given kind of recommendations or suggestions in relation to how you can or should recover from this thing?
I'm not going to lie, I didn't even get told how to look after the stitches. I remember checking out the hospital and then running back and being like, hold on, can I shower? Like, and they were like, no, put like a wrap round. And I was like, I haven't been given any. And they're like, oh God, like Ryan got me. Honestly, I think it was such a chaotic time to be in hospital, obviously with everything going on with COVID. It was such a mess. I was told to take it easy for 6 weeks. Obviously, I decided at this point I was going on Johnny Shore, which actually would have been, I would have went into isolation 14 days after getting released from hospital, so roughly 20 days from my surgery. So I was told to give it 6 weeks and then you'll be off crutches and you'll have some strength back in that leg. So I didn't really give myself, they obviously had their ideas of recovery and I had mine, and they were very different. I just really didn't know what to do myself. I think I couldn't stay in the hospital because I've got this personal feeling, it might be totally wrong, I've got a feeling that being around sick people makes you sick. I just think that if you're around people who are really ill and you're in that environment, you do not get better. You do not get better lying in a hospital bed 18 hours a day. Like, let me walk around, let me try and build some muscle here. And I think I was 100% correct to leave when I did, because they wanted me to stay longer. Because as soon as I start, the strength starts flying back in. When I'm the only time in hospital, I'm getting off the bed and using my legs if I want to go to the toilet. That's the only time I'm allowed. But by going home and challenging myself to walk faster, like, it was literally like building like muscle back in the leg. You could, like I said, you could feel it every day. And then like you had to like learn the motor patterns in your leg again. It's crazy that like by taking all the muscle tissue out, like you lose all of them. If you'd put me like doing like a speed test, even when I developed a bit of muscle, my left leg would be so out of tune with the right. Like, you had to develop the motor patterns back. And that was literally like what I did for them 2 weeks before I went to isolation. It was the only thing I focused on. I was doing physiotherapy on it three times a day, trying to stretch it, but obviously trying not too hard on the upper leg because you're probably really going to pull their muscles as they're developing back. And then just getting as much time on my feet as possible till it would hurt because it would ache, and then I'd go and rest. And it's probably the most on point I've ever been in terms of nutrition in my life. Like, even when I used to be really heavily into gym, I'd never been so on top of, like, on this, I was there like, okay, I need my vitamin K because I need clotting factors in that leg, I need vitamin C, anti-inflammatory. And I was so on top of that, and I think it's probably one of the healthiest times of my life. Like, coming out of it, it's the most dialed in I've been in terms of like nutrition for this, not being at work, so all I could do was focus on getting it back. And yeah, it was actually them 2 weeks, because I felt like I was working against the clock. That was interesting. Like,
how did you find getting back into eating consistently after that experience? Because I would imagine with the excessive amount of morphine and painkillers, surely that had an effect on you, did it?
No, I'm not going to lie. I'm so blessed. For this is, maybe I'm going to think, no matter what, whether I'm sick or not, one thing my body doesn't stop is my ability to eat. I can always eat. And then my parents being as good as they are, I was that person, even though it was COVID and people were out in hospital, my mum and dad would drop up two beef meals, two salmon meals, and I'd be there in the hospital with my nice smelling food while everyone else is eating their horrible hospital food. So like I said, even when I was in hospital, they made sure I was so on point. They're probably petrified about my health. And they have every reason to be, which is why I think they have always tried to help out whenever they can. So yeah, the eating was never a problem. Like I said, it was the most probably dialed in and focused I've been trying to get my numbers right after it, because I know I'm going in the Geordie Shore house. I know I'm doing it when I shouldn't be. Let's try and get some sort of health balance for these 2 weeks before we go and probably mess it up again.
That was part one of my chat with Ryan Taylor. And if you are listening to this episode on the day of the release, part two is out tomorrow. But as you know, otherwise, part two will be the next episode on our list.